Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Captain! Captain! Signatures detected!
Shields up!
Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons.
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery, a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
You got pep in your step here for the 10th and final episode of season one of Lower Decks.
I'm faking it, Ben. I'm faking the pep.
You're faking it?
Don't the pep on a nasty pep or whatever.
A couple of hours ago, you told me you were nursing a pretty brutal headache. Is that still with you?
No, I think I've shrugged it off. I'm
hey,
in
that's
that,
good.
Nice post-headache afterglow. The post-headache refractory period that actually feels pretty good.
Are you on something or are you on one?
I mean, besides back on my business.
Yo, you heard the new episode of The Greatest Discovery? Adam was on one.
No. I took a couple over-the-counters and tried not to clench. And
Do you Brux?
Oh yeah, oh fuck yeah! Like broke a mouth guard bad.
Wow, do you Brux while you're awake too? Because I know that some people do only while sleeping, some people don't do only while awake, and some people do both.
Do you even Brux, bro?
I do, but only when I'm unconscious. So it doesn't bother anyone.
I mean, it's an ongoing challenge for me. I would say that I mostly do it at night, but you know, like it's the challenge of my life to be a little more in the moment at any given time. And when I am in the moment, I often notice that I'm bruxing. So
damn, you know, our buddy Chuck Bryant is a daytime bruxer as well.
Is that why we have such muscular faces? Both of us, like from basically doing the spring loaded eagle's claw exerciser with our mouths and jaws.
Yeah, you guys should commiserate over that sometime.
Yeah, we really should. I love that guy. You know what we could talk about was the first time in a long time you and I have hung out in real life. We had a tacos lunch yesterday.
That's true.
And a good old-fashioned chop 'em up.
Yeah, we found a taco place in Culver City that had an outdoor eating setup where we could sit, you know, you at one end and I at the other of a picnic table and enjoy a meal and pretend like nothing was burning.
It felt really good to get the band back together. It was fun.
Yeah, man. It's almost like there's kind of like a vacuum of leadership on how best to go about these things.
How best to go about our lunches? Someone's just got to take charge, Ben, because you can't just assume that the lunch plans are going to go away on their own.
I'm saying how best to go about like managing our relationship with the Demic. And I think that an outdoor lunch hang is acceptable, but sometimes I'm like, maybe Adam and I should just merge pods. We already have three pods together. Why can't we have a fourth?
Oh, geez. Sounds like a lot of work. I don't think of what we did as risky behavior, but I will admit, like every time I every time I leave the safety of my home,
yeah,
and go outside where there are people, even
just going outside and like having a place I had to be at a time,
yeah,
I'm so out of practice.
Yeah, yeah, that wasn't easy.
It was crazy.
Had to put on a clean shirt. Actually, I'm pretty good at putting on clothes.
I've noticed that. I've never seen you wearing a pair of shorts, you know, above your waist or...
Hey, I know we're both very happily committed and married to our wives, but do you ever think about what your life would be like under quarantine if you were just by yourself? How far you'd let yourself go?
Oh, man. I've let myself go pretty far despite the backstop of a person who can tell me I'm looking a bit scruffy lately. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I think it would be bad. I think it would be a bad situation.
I think our wives are doing great work.
Yeah.
On everyone's behalf.
They're helping us out in big ways. Right after we hung out yesterday, I was on the phone with my wife and I was like, hey, you know how we have a garage now? I think I might have forgotten to close the door of the garage when I left. And she was like, oh, let me go out and look. And sure enough, I had forgotten to close the garage door. And she reached up to close the garage by grabbing the section of garage door that was closest to the bottom.
No.
And pulling down.
That's not what you grab.
That's not what you grab. And she learned that the hard way. It was one of those, like, you hear a person go through excruciating pain on the other end of a phone.
Oh, no.
For 5 minutes things where, like, I'm just, like, sitting in traffic, unable to help.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. That was a weird way to end a day that seemed like it was, like, going pretty good.
I'm not laughing at you or the situation, but it's... everyone's got it bad everywhere, man. That's the prevailing feeling at this point.
That's the way the wind is blowing. And
hey, you should get yourself one of those Matt Howie style, you know, connected garage door situations.
Oh, yeah.
where you know if it's open or it's closed just by looking at your phone.
You tell Siri, close that door. That would be great.
Yeah, get yourself some connected cameras. Maybe we should get ourselves a sponsor in the connected camera department.
We should get a sponsor in the connected garage door department first and foremost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it possible to retrofit a non-motorized garage door for smart home?
Yeah, here's how it works. The app calls an Uber driver. It's like Uber Eats. So uh-huh. you open up your Uber Eats app, it calls a driver to your home, and then that person gets out of their vehicle, goes up to your garage and either opens or closes it. It's called Uber Garage.
And then you're like, damn, we just ordered like one order of Kung Pao chicken and one order of braised green beans and it was somehow $50. What? And the restaurant's going out of business because this company is gouging them? What?
Yeah, but ever since we started overpaying for food, we've never had an issue with the garage door. Doing great.
That is going great, yeah.
Hey, wrap up the story though. Your wife's finger did not get amputated. We're okay with the hand.
She did like a FaceTime with a physician who said, like, keep an eye on it for a couple of days, and if it doesn't stop hurting a ton, go to an urgent care or something. But
it sucks to be the person taking a shower who has to hold their hand over their head. That's not a fun way to be for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and then your hand is a little weird funk on it, you know?
You gotta shampoo your head with the opposite hand.
Yeah. Imagine being in Quar alone with a hand injury, Adam. I mean, give me a fucking break.
You're gonna learn a lot of things about the opposite hand.
The
that
stranger.
Was your circumstance, yeah. Wow. Well, we learned a lot of things about our Lower Decks crew today. So did the rest of the crew, really.
Yeah. Do you want to get into it, Adam?
Maybe that's how we pivot into the season one finale of Lower Decks. It's the 10th episode. It's called No Small Parts. How does the saying go? No small parts, only small people?
There are no small parts, only small actors.
Oh, yeah.
The Cerritos is in orbit around a planet from the TOS era, Beta 3. So a bunch of jokes that went right over my head until I read the Memory Alpha article about Beta 3 and Landru. These bits were lost on this Star Trek podcaster.
If we ever get another off-season episode of Greatest Discovery, and at this point, I don't even know if we'll ever get one again, we'll have to watch that episode of the animated series, right?
You're saying there may no longer ever be off-seasons?
Who knows, man? The way this pipeline is working, it's the episode of I Love Lucy where they're working the line. Is that an I Love Lucy episode or is that Laverne and Shirley
she's like stuffing chocolates in her mouth?
Yeah, it just keeps coming and we're stuffing episodes in our mouth and we just can't stuff any more in there. I've got bruxism.
Mm-hmm. Look at me. I am the chubby bunny now. Anyways.
I did love the animated series callback, and I love that when Ransom looks at his pad, it's a picture of animated Kirk and Spock. It's sort of like great. The flip side of how South Park does references to real people, and like you see actual pictures of people in South Park.
Right, right.
I think that's fun how you see animated Kirk and Spock here.
I originally looked at animated series reference to see if I could figure out what Landru was, and mm-hmm. I was... surprised to discover that this was an actual live action episode. Anyways, this is a second contact that is just kind of like re-correcting the course of a society that, you know, like original series is a lot of just Kirk beaming down and telling people what's fucked up about them and, you know, and then leaving.
Kirk negging planet after planet into shape.
Yeah.
Before seeing too much of Lower Decks, you could assume that a weaker show would have made this the pattern. The always right. returning to a planet that had been visited before by another Star Trek show. And right. it's neat that it took basically the whole season for that to happen. And it was really just kind of a throwaway cold open way to... Like, I wonder if they started at the TOS joke that Ransom makes and they wrote backwards in a way to get there, because it's so mathy. Like, that moment is so mathy and good comedically.
Yeah.
I don't know how you get there unless you do it that way.
Right. Maybe it just came to them. Anyways, they're supposed to head out, but they've still got crew down on the planet, and we smash cut to Mariner passing out painting supplies and other art implements to children gathered in the rustic and beige-toned town square of Beta 3.
Ro Laren. Establish the dress code for scenes like this, right? You always want to take off the uniform before handing out the crayons.
Yeah. It's a good thing that the Beta 3 people do not keep pizza ovens, because they would have been doomed in this scenario.
Right.
I think the deal is that Landru forbade them creativity, so Boimler and Mariner are kind of like furthering the mission of giving these people something to worship aside from Landru by giving art supplies to the kids.
I'm glad you did the research, Ben.
I mean, I'm just...
That's an interesting note.
That's context clues from the episode. I didn't do any further research than that.
Wow. I thought the kids would want some toys, and on this mission, Mariner and Boimler were cool enough to recognize that.
No, I mean...
Give them something to do.
Beta 3 famously has lots of wood from which to carve dolphins, but no mineral oil to polish said dolphins with.
Right.
Boimler's knowledge of what Mariner's parentage is has kind of unburdened him of all his rule following in this moment.
The captain's your mom, your dad's an admiral, you're basically Starfleet royalty. I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah, he feels freer to shoot his mouth off around Mariner for sure, which is strange. Like, it's strange because later on in the episode, it's sort of the opposite thing that happens to so many other crew people, like the way right. Boimes is acting here. But they sort of like set their uniform tunics in a pile, like like coats at a party, except the communicator line is open and this conversation is being heard on the bridge of the Cerritos.
The communicators don't have big drivers in their internal speakers, so the sound is just not that loud. But everything they're saying is audible on the bridge, and this is when Boimler chooses to confess that he found out Mariner's big secret, and in the process reveals that secret to the entire bridge crew.
Boimler gets beamed up mid-bit,
yeah,
which is awkward as hell.
Yeah, a mid-bit about Mariner's mom, and then is face-to-face with Mariner's mom.
Yeah. It's a great visual. It's not just the visual of Boimler being embarrassed, but also without his uniform. It's just a bad look all the way around.
Did I ever tell you about my old college roommate, Tomas?
No.
He was my roommate for junior and senior year with a couple of other buddies. And Tomas and I kind of stopped getting along as well toward the end of senior year. And at one point he was like leaving our off campus housing apartment dump and like walked out of the space and to one of my other roommates. I was just like, geez, that guy.
And oh God.
And my other roommate's face dropped and was like, did Tomas actually leave or did he just open the door and close it? And I go, he left. And I just hear him walk by behind me going, I heard what you said. I have felt what Boimler feels in this moment.
I don't know anyone who doesn't know that kind of pain. It's like when the show's over and you and I start talking about Robs, but we realize that we haven't stopped the record.
Ooh.
Yeah. Robs knows what it's like too.
Yeah.
Robs, the real Tomas of Greatest Discovery.
Wow.
After our title sequence, we come back and Captain Dayton, who we met a couple of episodes, has a new ship.
Yeah, it's the sparkly new Solvang, fresh out of the box. I wish we got the unboxing of the Solvang. You know, it comes in that really cool packaging that is so satisfying to like. You pull the little tab and then it unwinds like a pack of gum, like that little strip that removes the rest of the plastic.
Yeah. And it's like nice. They've like really like intricately molded the paper packaging so that it's like, I mean, a perfect millimeter of tolerance around the ship. I mean, it's not entirely unboxed, right? She's still got the little plastic decals covering the screens so they don't get scratched up in shipping.
You look really closely at the box and it says assembled by the Federation at Utopia Planitia Shipyards.
Designed in California.
Yeah.
I installed a medicine cabinet the other day and it's got a mirror on the outside and then on the inside of the door there's another mirror and both mirrors had that plastic film on them to protect them during shipping. And it's like 30 inches by 24 inches of plastic decal to peel off. It was the greatest thing that ever happened to me.
God, you get two runs at that? Did you save one for the day after?
I blew it all at once. I was just like collapsed in a heap on the floor of my bathroom.
There's something so satisfying even to throwing that shit away because when you crumple it up, it kind of sticks to itself.
Yeah. And crumples to nothing.
Yeah. It's great.
Beautiful.
The Solvang is analyzing a plasma cloud under the command of the aforementioned Captain Dayton when a giant mystery ship attacks it, and they know they're overmatched right away. So it is much like the main title sequence, a moment where a ship of this class needs to bug out. But unfortunately, as soon as they go to warp, they've already been caught in this ship's claw, and it's like driving away from a parking spot when your car's been booted. It destroys the ship. And RSVP to the Solvang in a cloud of lederhosen and warm potato salad.
Dayton was captain of the Solvang for 5 minutes and she lost every single life aboard. Starfleet needs more captains like that.
After the Rubidoux, how quick were you to give Dayton another command?
I thought that if you lose a ship, there is automatically a court-martial. I think Dayton should have been in much bigger trouble.
I think one of the things this series has done really well is play with the tone of things and not just comedy tone, because when we see the destruction of the ship, we go super wide, cinematically wide.
Yeah, it's very 2009 Star Trek in that moment.
Like the visual language of Star Trek is that space death is a wide shot and a quiet moment. Yeah. And you definitely get that here in an effective non-comedy way. It feels sincerely dark and bad.
This episode takes much longer trips outside of comedy language than previous episodes in this series have. And they feel really like self-assured moments. Like it's a show that's like, hey, like we're going to drop the bits for a minute and like tell a really intense story for a while.
Yeah.
You wonder if our show would ever do something like that. I think we're too attached to the bits.
We've never experienced the death of one of our hosts, so yeah.
Yet.
When that day comes, we'll throw to a wide shot.
Yeah.
Until then, for everyone watching right now, we're gonna keep it locked right here.
The scene immediately following this is a scene very similar to the open of the series. It's Tendi now serving as the orientation officer for a new member of the crew. That member of the crew is a Starfleet uniform painted exocomp.
With pips and everything, it looks like. It looks like pips, but I don't think the exocomp is a commander.
No, there's one pip. There's other things that are the same size as a pip right above the pip.
Oh, yeah.
But this is Ensign Exocomp.
I had some pip confusion there. You know what? My pips are down here is probably what the Exocomp would tell me because I was looking in the wrong place.
Yeah, you're like looking the Exocomp right in the upper pips.
Yeah. This is, I believe, the only moment where the word exocomp is expressed because...
Shocking.
I know. Because a little later, it gets renamed.
Yeah. If we had been in the writer's room, I think this would have been the episode we got fired on because we would have just been like, but what about adding a couple more references to the word exocomp in this scene? And Mike McMahon would have been like, you guys, that is not a good bit. Get the fuck out of here.
We invited you here to observe and take pictures, not contribute. This exocomp is a lot like Tendi in behavior. Which makes them fast friends, it seems.
Yeah, they have that same unkillable optimism, and they are excited to get started with orienting the Exocomp to the USS Cerritos. Meanwhile, in the captain's ready room, Captain Freeman and Ensign Mariner are discussing what now, given the fact that the secret is out. And their motivations are finally like given names. Like basically Freeman is embarrassed of Mariner and Mariner doesn't want to have her ass kissed because of who her folks are.
Captain? Captain's daughter? I mean Mariner?
Oh, what is it, Jack?
Ransom is there to discuss a job opening on the Sacramento, a ship that we'll learn later is a very desirable place to be.
Yeah. Who doesn't want to be on the USS Sacktown?
There are questions about Ransom and Mariner's relationship I think, up to now. It has been at times flirtatious. It has sometimes been manager subordinate. But in this scene, it's taken a turn for the awkward. Ransom doesn't quite know how to act around her.
Right, because that power dynamic has shifted in a way where the variables are pretty hard to compute. And what Ransom finds himself doing is accidentally slipping into sexual innuendos and then being kind of caught in a hall of sexual innuendo mirrors.
Yeah, like the end of Enter the Dragon, where instead of the weird like claw weapon thing, there's just like a big floppy dildo.
Yeah, right. It always comes back to claw weapons with you.
Afterward, like, this is a scene that begins just an avalanche of awkward directed at Mariner. She's in the corridor leaving this meeting, and she runs into Lieutenant Steve Levy. Nice to know that there's a place for conspiracy nuts in the 24th century. He and many others on the ship see Mariner as a conduit to the captain. It's not an awkwardness that's like, oh, I believe that she's a spy for the captain. It's what can Mariner do for me with her relationship? And so Steve Levy is like, I've got ideas for the captains yet. Here are those. Someone wants to take a selfie with her. And then Dr. Katz,
her name is Dr. Tana,
wants the captain's permission to fuck Shax.
Dr. Katz thinks Shax is a snack.
He is, but like, is this an HR sort of thing where you need to report your interest in a coworker so it's not sketchy?
If that's true, Ransom has a lot of paperwork that he needs to get filed.
I think it's fun that there is room for conspiracy theorists in Star Trek, but not Q, because in the 24th century, all of QAnon died after taking off their helmets in space because they believe space is where the real air is. Lucky them.
Yeah, and lucky us.
Yeah.
She hits on an idea, though. The Cerritos is off to the Kala system to see what's up with the USS Solvang, and on their way, Mariner realizes in a conversation with Boimler that the way out of this conundrum is to get promoted off the ship. If she can button herself up and, you know, get a couple of good weeks under her belt, as far as her record is concerned, maybe she will be advanced to lieutenant and transferred to the Sacramento, where nobody knows her and she won't have the problem of people brown nosing her.
It's weird. Like, I feel like she used to be comfortable with the sort of attention that came from a rebel acting out. She got attention for that all the time. She's getting just as much attention now, but it is the reason for that attention that is discomfort making.
I love that she considers her previous persona to be Robin Hood bullshit.
Yeah, and I love how this is another example of Boimler having an idea and Mariner hijacking it. Like, Boimler's like, you know, maybe the Sacramento is the place to be. And Mariner is like, holy shit, that's the place to be. It's a fresh start. Like,
yeah,
that happens all the time. Poor Boims.
Yeah. Boimler cannot compete.
Mariner's transformation into promotable ensign is like is like a Rambo-esque style, like tying of shoelaces and rolling down of sleeves and tightening of bun.
Yeah, it's getting the uniform up to ship shape and getting the hair real squared away, and suddenly she's a very different character and you know, speaking with more formality, and it's just not the same.
When you think of hand pie, how long would it have taken you to think of key lime hand pie? I don't believe that would be in my top 15 hand pies that I'd even think about as an option.
Yeah, because I think of hand pie as being primarily a fruit filling, not a custard filling.
Apple, peach. I mean, no, I remember having like chocolate and banana cream hand pie.
Wow. I've never encountered that.
Those will make your ears ring. They're so sweet.
Here's why it doesn't make any sense, is the kind of crust you would have for a key lime or a banana cream pie is the graham cracker.
Are you saying Billups made a graham cracker crusted hand pie? Is that even a thing?
Scientifically impossible.
You could only get a key lime hand pie out of a replicator. There's no way Billups is making one.
Yeah, but if you're building it at a molecular level, it doesn't need to be workable. Fuck. You just blew this conspiracy wide open. You're the Lieutenant Steve Levy of this podcast.
Poor Billups.
Is that a good segment for this show?
What?
Like, what's your Steve Levy? What's your conspiracy theory about this episode?
All right, fine. Yeah, we did that. We got a new segment.
What's your Steve Levy? We get a little scene with Tendi and the exocomp, and the exocomp reveals its name to be Peanut Hamper. This after having analyzed what the perfect name would be based on languages spoken within the Federation.
This name is dumb.
Yeah.
But it's one of those challenges that you get in role-playing games, right? You need to name your character. We've talked about this in books and stuff too, right? Like, naming a character ideally is like an edit. You don't want to notice a name for being dumb.
Yeah.
This is a dumb name, I think. This is not good.
Yeah. It's Ursula Le Guin, I think, talks about when you give a character a name that isn't like an Earth name, it should at least pass mental spell check. It should at least like seem like a name. And Peanut Hamper doesn't seem like a name.
So there was a player on my favorite football team that got in legal trouble. I want to say it was like 10 or 15 years ago.
A football player in legal trouble?
I know.
Surely you jest.
But unlike most legal trouble that football players are embroiled in, this was funny legal trouble. Because he was arrested for pooping in his girlfriend's hamper.
If that's a crime, man, I'm moving to Canada.
I just don't know how the arresting officer and everyone involved with the trial isn't like, how does that go down? What's the vibe?
Yeah.
You definitely, so
ladies
gross.
And gentlemen of the jury,
entered into evidence is this hamper. I'm gonna use the laser pointer to outline what is clearly feces. Mariner and Boehm's go into Ransom's quarters, which is filled with an enviable amount of free weights. Ben, I looked at his setup in there, and I was like, damn.
He doesn't have captain's trinkets. He has commander's medicine balls.
I know, pretty nice. He is having the hardest time figuring out who to give this promotion to, because on the one hand, Boehm's has a creepy amount of experience, according to him, and Mariner is the captain's daughter, so.
Right.
Go figure.
We haven't even talked about Rutherford's button yet, but right. At a certain point, he like rips a panel off of his implant and starts pushing this button that cycles through what seems to be a sort of endless variety of different personality modes, which is really a terrifying idea, actually. Like, the idea that his personality is normal to this system and that there are lots and lots of Instagram filters that can be applied to it that just force him into talking like a cowboy or being optimistic.
I love how this situation is never elevated to the point of a medical emergency. Like, right. He really needs to see someone about this, and he does not.
No, he gets right back to work, and he's working on the shuttle Sequoia, which seems to be the dumpiest shuttle in Starfleet.
it's a real rat rod of a shuttle. It's got like a, like it's painted like the nose of a fighter plane. It's got like the shark's teeth on it. It's a lot of fun.
It's got like childlike drawings of the four lead characters of Lower Decks on the door. Did you notice that?
I love this set. I wish we spent more time here. I mean, we have on occasion. This is like the basement in the X-Files. Like this is their hangout.
Yeah, but I feel like it's the Yosemite in the background usually.
Yeah.
In those other scenes.
Yeah. This is the lower garage.
Did you get the thing where Peanut Hamper was bad at picking up objects in this scene and then good at surgery in the next scene? I didn't really understand what that was about.
I got it in that it is as you described, but I don't know if there was anything more than that there was to get.
I mean, it seemed like they were setting something up with Peanut Hamper, where Tendi is like worried about letting Peanut Hamper get involved with, you know, doing surgery on a patient because Peanut Hamper can't pick up a can of dilithium. But then Peanut Hamper is great. And then it seems like that would like factor in somehow. And I guess maybe the idea is that they just wanted to get across that Tendi has to like come to trust Peanut Hamper's capabilities.
Well, I guess if we're doing that thing where we're writing backwards again, we need to get Peanut Hamper into Six Bay when Rutherford arrives with the virus later. How do you get him? How do you get Peanut Hamper there other than by making Peanut Hamper good at surgery to the extent that that's where Peanut Hamper is for the longer term, right?
Yeah, but Peanut Hamper is blue, so theoretically just would be there.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seemed like a narrative hole that I couldn't quite wrap my mind around what was trying to be. What, like, it seemed like very intentional in a way that I didn't get, you know?
To me, it just felt like there are no straight lines in this story. Like Peanut Hamper couldn't just go straight to Six Bay. There needed to be an establishment of doubt.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
I love how this show plays with its focal plane, because the scene in Six Bay where Peanut Hamper is performing surgery does such a good job of like stuff in the background being in focus, and then we get the tight close-up on the laser doing its work and the characters in soft focus in the back. And there's a bunch of that happening in this scene specifically, but also throughout the episode that I think just really makes everything on this show look great.
It's a good-looking show.
Red alert! Shields up!
The ship flies into the teeth of a packlet attack. They do that thing where they drop out of warp in a debris field, and it is the wreck of the Solvang. No life forms detected. Pretty catastrophic.
I love the reveal of the saucer of the Solvang. It's such a creepy shot, the way it's lit.
The shadow kind of coming away from it and revealing the registry and name of the ship. And then right behind it, the attacking ship, which is this big hulk. I mean, it really dwarfs the Cerritos, and without provocation starts opening fire. They try and make their escape. And again, this ship shoots these kind of grappling hooks out and grabs the Cerritos. And Freeman realizes that if they try to go to warp, that's going to destroy the ship, because that's obviously what the Solvang would have tried. So instead, they shut it all down. They lose a nacelle for their trouble, but the ship is adrift and not dead. So that's good.
I was really surprised that this was halfway through the ep, because we'd just gone through 13 or 14 minutes after the introduction of this problem to our return to it.
Yeah, this episode is a little longer than I think some of the others have been. The structure of it feels really different, even though it's got some pretty familiar elements for this show. Like, there's definitely the ship is getting torn apart and we're having an emotional catharsis moment in this episode. but it felt like it was coming from a really different place in a lot of ways.
I wonder if this show couldn't work as a longer episode. And by saying that, I'm saying I don't think the show could. I think you benefit from a shorter show in that some of the nostalgia runners that you get per episode, some of the other choices the show makes, by doubling the amount of those in a runtime, I think makes the show worse.
Yeah. There are those episodes of Seinfeld that are like 45 minutes long. It'll be like 10:30 and I'll be like, hey, I'll turn to my wife on the couch. I'll be like, you want to watch like one more episode of Seinfeld and then go to bed?
You want to watch the finale of Seinfeld with me?
And we put one on and it's like, what is going on here? This seems like it never ends.
Yeah.
Like the math of that show does not stretch to a full hour somehow. And I think you're right. Like the math of this show is similar enough that it would probably be tough.
On the view screen, it is revealed who these guys are, and it is the Packlids, Ben. The Packlids who have made a ship out of other ships. The Packlids who have clearly looted an old bowling alley of their claw crane games and attached it to their ship to use as disabling weapons.
I love the reimagining of how a Packlid would act in an aggressive stance, because
yeah,
one thing about the Packlid episode of TNG is that they're kind of playing up their helplessness, like intentionally. And These are not helpless Packlids, so they are not pursuing that strategy. They're pursuing a very aggro strategy, and I thought it was good.
The Cerritos having been disabled really puts Freeman in a bind. She needs to empower Mariner to save the day here.
Yeah, and she's really fucked up too, right? Like Freeman's got a pretty major abdominal wound. And
yeah.
she definitely takes the restrictors off Mariner. She wants that outside the box thinking that Mariner made famous.
I need a dangerous half-baked solution that breaks Starfleet codes and totally pisses me off.
This is the moment where the episode really starts humming, because when Mariner hops into action, she kickstarts the Lower Decks team into action, and then everyone goes a team from here,
right,
in their special way. Like their special superpowers are brought to bear on the problem here, and for Rutherford, that's waking Badgie.
Yeah, the return of Badgie. Very exciting to see him come back. Badgie is going to be used to pursue a sort of ID4 style solution to the problem. We're going to upload a virus into the mothership,
right?
And the logic here is actually like better developed than ID4, because
it really is.
The Packlids have built this super ship by kind of kludging together parts from other species, and Boimler even gets like a diagram of this up on the screen, and you see the like Klingon logo and the Ferengi logo and the Cardassian logo showing what all the different parts are. And so the theory is that the operating system that such a ship would have has got to be a pretty like open system, because otherwise how could it work with all of these different competing computer systems? And so they can slip something past the goalie pretty easily, but they need to do it quickly, and that's why they turned to Badgie.
I love how, like, listening to a Packlid tell you something, they even beam over slowly. When the Packlids board the ship, it seems like they're in process for many, many, many seconds. It's what allows the bridge crew to leave the bridge and head to the weapons locker, which is what you need to do when your ship's getting boarded. And they're unable to make it there in time. And it's fortunate that Mariner has squirreled away a bunch of contraband into the corridor compartments, including a Spock helmet with police light on top.
I loved seeing that thing.
This music cue is straight out of Aliens. I love what they do with the music here. And the music throughout this episode, I thought, was big, really big sounding. And this is one of those moments.
Well, and they've gone sound alike a lot with music, but this is one of the few times where they've like actually pulled a real Star Trek theme off the shelf and dusted it off. So yeah, this moment feels great. It's a lot of, you know, everybody gets a different weapon. And there's, you know, questions from the captain, like, why are all of the panels of my ship full of your junk? But also, like, how can she stay mad when they're fending off these Packlet invaders?
She gets really badly hurt here. And I was surprised at how I felt when I saw her animated expression when she was down. Like, they drew her in such a way that evoked empathy. She really looked hurt badly.
Yeah.
I was surprised at how effective that was.
Starfleet protocol, when you have a badly injured member of the crew, has improved a lot since the Wrath of Khan era. Instead of taking her to the bridge, they take her straight to Six Bay.
Oh, that's smart. The Scotty rule has not been implemented.
No. They get to work on helping her out, and they're talking about this plan. Rutherford now has his virus, and they realize that the virus has to be delivered in person to the Packlet ship, and they're like, who can we send? Who is going to be able to fly through space and is small enough to slip inside the ship unnoticed? Who could it be?
Peanut Hamper doesn't want to do this, and in fact beams itself out into space to avoid being given this job. Instead, it's Rutherford who slaps his isolinear chip in the side of his head like a CF card into a card reader. He's going to be the one to go. And before you even are able to breathe, Shax grabs him and they head to that Sequoia shuttle from the other scene and they head out.
Yeah.
And what was a super speedy pace turns into a full-on sprint from here to the end.
Indeed. It's a, like, we got to download the virus into the mainframe with a progress bar creeping across the screen situation when Badgy reveals that this is actually an opportunity for Badgy to get revenge on Rutherford. Badgy wants Rutherford to pay for breaking his neck.
And for a while, it seems as though he will exact his revenge. When Rutherford's connected to the computer via the USB cable and that upload bar crawls to an end, he realizes that Badgy tells him that the only way that the upload will complete is when he dies.
Right.
And so as Shax is giving him cover by fighting hand to hand in the background, Shax realizes that the ship is set to self-destruct, yanks the appliance out of Rutherford's head, puts him in the shuttle, and then pushes him away in order to save his life.
Pushes the shuttle out of the hole that they made in the side of the Packlet ship. Shax buys the farm to save the crew. He needs them, anys them.
It's one of the most heroic things I think we've ever seen on Star Trek.
I did not see a bridge character dying in this episode, and it was like really big. It felt momentous.
Yeah. I was surprised and affected by it for sure, because Shax is so fun and big.
So the Packlet ship explodes and you think you're home free, but then three more of them come out of warp and get their grapples onto the Cerritos. And
when a Packlet ship gets yours into their claws, you can't break free because they're made of metal and Packlet claws are strong.
You need to feel safe.
This seems like it's the end for the Cerritos, but this is just when the USS Titan comes out of warp. USS Titan, an E-era Del Sol class starship captained by William Riker. First officered, I suppose, by Deanna Troi. Is she first officering, or is she still ship's counselor?
Look, man, if you get your own command and you don't XO your wife,
ooh, it's going to be an an awkward first dinner after that conversation gets had.
That's what I call a chilly bridge.
Anyways, the Titan, great ship, one of the best ships.
Kicks all kinds of ass.
Makes very short work of these pack leads.
With the theme song playing.
Episode one TNG.
Yeah.
Theme song playing. And cheers all around. We cut back to Starbase where the Cerritos is getting its new replacement nacelle put on. Some suggestion is made that they like sex the ship up a little bit, and Freeman rejects this idea. Freeman is very anti-movie era entrepreneur, I suppose.
It seems like for season two, episode one, we're not going to get like a refit Cerritos, which I think personally, I agree with Captain Freeman on this.
Yeah, we're just like, as of the last episode, fully in love with the Cerritos. Do not take it away from us now.
Right, right.
So Rutherford wakes up some kind of recovery ward on the station, right? This doesn't look like it's happening on the ship.
Yeah, I think it's too spacious to be on the ship.
Yeah, he's got bandages over where his implant used to be. Wakes up in his kind of typical chipper mood, and Tendi has been by his side the whole time, and is really excited that he woke up. And then they come to realize that he does not have any memory of, I guess, the entire first season of the show.
Oh no!
He's gonna have to Riker-like watch all the episodes.
I mean, I wonder what's going to happen to his head now. That implant was destroyed on the ship. Right. And every time you see him the rest of this episode, he's wearing the giant bandage.
Yeah, is he going to have a new implant or is he going to have normal head? I thought he had to have the implant.
You know what was low-key gross was when Shax threw him into the shuttle and you saw that side profile of his face.
Yeah, it's very Vader getting his helmet off.
Yeah, yeah. Tendi is psyched because she gets to replay their friendship all over again. And she's confident that they will be best friends once again.
That is that infectious Tendi optimism. I drink with glee every time I experience it.
We go happy right into sad because it's Shax's funeral in the next scene. We get a Dr. Katz.
Her name!
Having not been able to fuck Shax before he died, clearly really feeling the moment here. Ben, that's an empty casket, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. There's no way to collect the remains of Shax. He was on a ship that exploded in space.
I know. It's sad, the idea of a casket XL and yet no body inside.
You shoot that at a Genesis planet and nothing.
Yeah. He's with the prophets now. In Freeman's office, Mariner and her are getting back to normal. And by normal, I mean arguing about her behavior and whether or not it's punishable.
You know, the captain goes through the litany of strikes against Mariner, all of the insubordination and all of the contraband that she'd been stowing aboard the ship. But They kind of reach a detente, which is that they can be two sides of one coin. Like the captain has to follow the regs, and Mariner does not in a certain way. But
yeah,
Mariner can kind of be the chaos agent on the captain's behalf when she needs it, and that's actually a pretty cool, like, powerful team up.
It's a hell of a combination.
This show, more than any other, really criticizes Starfleet's many failings and frequent contradictions, and this is a scene that has a couple of lines in that spirit, you know. Yeah. Like they both sort of lament the idea of their mission being sort of flawed from the start, right? Like the idea of second contact, great idea, should probably do it a little earlier, right? Seems to be their agreement, because the maintenance of these relationships is the problem. And Freeman, to her credit, comes around to how useful Mariner could be going forward.
Right. This is a scene where I was like, wow, like this show is going to be really different in the next season, because like the Tendi and Rutherford thing, you can kind of retread some of the jokes. You can like Sam and Diane reset them to will they, won't they, but friendship version. But now the secret is out with Mariner and Freeman, and Mariner and Freeman actually have like an agreement instead of tension. And
right.
That's a really different dynamic.
There seems to be a conspiratorial agreement about what or what not to tell Mariner's father about this arrangement, though, which may be a greater conflict in season two.
Indeed. Riker is hanging out in the bar, I guess, on the Cerritos. This looked like the Cerritos' bar, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And like the sort of comfort a visiting big star feels, you know, like big star little ship is how he's walking around.
I thought it was interesting how much they put Riker in the foreground and Troy in the background in these moments. Like she gets her moment where she just like casually destroys Ransom's personality.
But that's always the vibe though, right? Like Riker's always been the big and Troy has always been the, not the small, but like the one who takes her shot. Like her shot hits harder because it's at a lower volume. This scene, as well as the one where the Titan attacks the pack lids, is an interesting example of how different acting is from voice acting, because didn't Jonathan Frakes sound different as a voice actor for animation?
It sounded like they went much bigger with the way they deliver the lines, both of them.
I think to their credit, like I think you can't talk like you do on a live action show on an animated series. I think you'd sound flat and weird.
Yeah, right. There's got to be some reason why it's these two characters that get to get cameos in new Star Trek shows.
Did you read that this is now the sixth Star Trek television series that Jonathan Frakes has appeared in? Six. Six of them.
Wow.
A record that will never be broken.
God. I'd love to just like sit down next to that guy and ask him what that's like. If I ever had an opportunity like that, you know I would take it.
Yeah. It's amazing. And Marina Sirtis and he became the first actors to portray the same characters on five different series. The sixth one was the Tom Riker appearance on DS9.
Oh.
Pretty awesome.
Damn.
I'm Commander William Riker from the Federation Starship Enterprise. It's not possible.
Riker walks up to Boimler, says he's really impressed with Boimler's service record.
Except he calls him Boomler, which is awesome.
Yeah, that was good. There is kind of a wordless moment where Boimler reads this iPad as Riker, who is friends with Mariner, kind of walks off to the bar with her to goof around. And we smash cut to the Titan, where Boimler is putting a second hollow pip on his collar. He's in the DS9 version of the uniform. He's the new guy on the Titan, and Mariner is leaving angry voicemails on his iPad, feeling very betrayed that Boimler is the one that got away.
Look at Boimler thriving. His parents transferred him to a different school, and now he's made new friends. He knows the planet that his away mission is going to. He's popular. Yeah,
he's got this whole new sense of confidence.
He's getting the second chance that I wish I got in middle school.
It's the authentic version of confidence that he was trying to put on in the I Have a Canadian Girlfriend episode.
Right. And God, it's anyone's guess what season two is going to be like, because we've sort of fractured our cast a little bit here.
Right.
Kurtzman said today that Frakes is coming back for season two of Lower Decks. I don't know how much after the first episode, but at least there's that to look forward to.
I really hope the Worf as captain of the Enterprise E comes into play in season two. If we're bringing back TNG characters, let's get Worf back in there.
It feels like season two is the time to do it. You don't want to lean on those guys for season one. You want to establish yourself. You want to do it on your own first.
I would say that this show has established itself.
I agree.
Did you like this episode, Adam?
Yeah, I think, I don't know what I was expecting for a season finale, but this was a great season finale. I thought we were talking about it before, like the pace of it was amazing and breathless. I thought the action of it was really well done. It felt like Star Trek in every way, in every positive way. The feeling of the thing is the challenge, right? It's not just looking like Star Trek. It's not referencing Star Trek-y things. It's not visual jokes like the Spock helmet. Like I've said Star Trek is a place, but Star Trek is a feeling. And Lower Decks as a series has got the feeling right. For being a comedy, I think that is an incredible challenge that they rose to. I think the episode and the season was really great.
I thought the season was great. I thought that this episode was very interesting in how self-confidently it steered clear of comedy for as much of it as it did.
Yeah.
But I missed the comedy, to be honest. Like, I didn't feel like this one had the funny in the way that the rest of the season had. And I think that was intentional in large part. Like, there were large swaths of the episode that weren't meant to be played for goof-em-ups. But I don't know. Like, I feel like in every episode up till now, I've had like three or four big laughs. And lots of little laughs, but like I've been really appreciating this show giving me like a solid belly laugh in a reliable way, and I definitely missed that in this episode. So I'm not gonna say I didn't like the episode, because I did, but I wished I'd gotten that belly laugh.
I do too, Ben. I think that observation is spot on. And like, I'm looking at my notes, I don't have anything for biggest laugh. And I usually do watching this show. And that was missing. But if you're going to have a self-serious episode, it's got to be the finale, right? It's got to be when the stakes are the highest, I guess.
Yeah. That's fair. Well, do you want to see if we have any high-stakes priority one messages in our inbox?
They're always high stakes, Ben. To the sender, anyway.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Adam, we got a couple of priority one messages here, and we're running out. I'm looking at the calendar going forward. We are low on priority one messages for this show. So if you'd like to get one, act now, and you can get one out pretty soon, I think. But our first one is from Sarah, and it is to Jay, and it goes like this. Happy 11th anniversary. I hope to keep watching Star Trek series of various levels of quality, as well as having many adventures with you and the Fuzzballs for years to come. 11 years! That's a lot of years.
I'm glad Sarah described Star Trek as the thing with the different levels of quality and not our Star Trek podcasts,
no.
Which are always great.
They're consistently fine.
Yeah. Hey, we came close to the requested date here of 10/17. So, happy anniversary on the 17th.
Yeah, and many happy returns to the Fuzzballs.
The 11th anniversary is the what? The cheeseball anniversary? What's the material at 11?
Yeah, you traditionally give a Cheeto or equivalent,
right?
Based gift.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I celebrate Jay and Sarah's anniversary a couple times a week. That's how that goes. Ben, our second priority one message is from Jesse from Boston. It is to my sister Erin and brother-in-law Sean.
Aww.
And the note about Sean is that Sean is pronounced Sean.
Good to know.
Message goes like this. Yay! Joining Big Brothers Flynn, Tiberius, and Quentin Riker is Harrison Miles.
I am Chief Miles Edward O'Brien. This is fucking spectacular.
Erin, I'm so glad when I asked why you picked Tiberius for a middle name, you directed me to the Friends of DeSoto. Rewatching TNG and finding DS9 reminds me of you and Dad, and has been a highlight of quarantine times. I love you and this old enterprise.
Oh.
Yeah. Spending your quarantine time wisely with watching 180 episodes of TNG and DS9. Not too shabby.
That's pretty good. Do you think that Flynn, Quentin, and Harrison are fuzzballs or babies? My mind went to pets initially, but now I'm wondering, are these children that we're talking about with middle names like Tiberius, Riker, and Miles?
God, I don't know. I don't want to assume animal where it's person.
Yeah, we may never know, but really exciting. And thank you to Erin for putting Jesse on to the Friends of DeSoto. That's a cool thing to do. I love it when people do that.
As Ben said, plenty of priority one message options for you in the upcoming season of Star Trek Discovery, season 3. So get in there and have your message permanently cemented into our episodes of Greatest Discovery going forward.
This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself an Edward Larkin?
Edward Larkin! I did. My Edward Larkin is an off-screen character, which is sort of a leitmotif that you have pursued with this series. But the character Jen became my Edward Larkin. She's referenced twice in this episode. Once when Mariner is talking about her secret being out and how Ransom has called her Jen before. I don't know. Is it Ransom or is it somebody else that called her Jen?
Oh, I don't know.
Anyway, she's been called Jen by senior officers, and she says to Boimler, like, who even is Jen? There's nobody named Jen on this ship. And then later on, when she's leaving the angry voicemails on Boimler's iPad, you know, she's like up late at night doing this in the bunk bed hallway, and an off-screen voice tells her to like quiet down, and she says, shut up, Jen. And I feel like that's Edward Larkin to me, like a character that their crewmates are derisive of and dismissive of and like are barely aware that they exist. I feel like Jen could get into some serious Larkin-like trouble.
I think Jen is being thrown around as an epithet. Like you don't want to be a Jen on the Cerritos.
No.
Like we've met Jennifer, the Andorian that Mariner shoves aside while running through a corridor. Like, seems to be a real hate on for Jens and Jennifers on this show. I think it's easy to conceive of a writer's room who's had a very bad experience with a Jen in their past.
Yeah. Did you have a Edward Larkin in this episode, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, I'm legit very sad about the death of Shax. And I'm going to make my Edward Larkin Shax in this episode. He dies on the best day of his life. You remember when he's in the shuttlecraft and they're heading for the ship? They're ready. They're ready.
Yeah.
They are ready to do the mission. And Shax has not stopped screaming. He's just fought a whole bunch of packlids in the hallway. He knows he's going to fight a bunch more when they board the ship. The Bajoran beefsteak.
Mm-hmm.
RSVP Shax. I'm going to miss him a ton. What a great character. We hardly knew him. But
Shax rules.
For that reason, I'm going to make him my Edward Larkin. Ben, I'm going to tag something onto this related to Shax.
Mm.
A prediction for season 2.
Oh, ho, ho.
Jet is going to be the new tactical officer of the Cerritos next year.
Wow. I like that.
Jet kicks ass.
Yeah.
Everyone loves him. He almost threw Boimler off a cliff on a holo program. He could be
defending
security.
The captain.
Yeah.
Too.
I think he's got the experience. I think he's got the temperament, and I think he has the respect of the crew. He'd make a fine tactical officer. So.
Hmm. Wow, that's a great prediction. I really hope that happens.
I can't wait for season 2 of Lower Decks, but up next week, Ben, is we're going back to Discovery. It's season 3, episode 1
yeah.
of Star Trek Discovery.
There was a little trailer that I think has some new footage in it at the end of this episode for season 3 of Star Trek Discovery. It didn't look like a trailer just for episode 1 of season 3. It looked like a trailer for the whole season. But yeah, some exciting images in there. I saw some Echo Papa 607s in there, so nice to see those persist into the future.
Yeah.
Saw some great big dinos. Nice to see those persist into the future. I'm fucking pumped for season 3 disco.
I'm pumped for season 3 disco greatest discovery. We had hoped to bring an interview with Sonequa Martin-Green to the show next week.
We tried super hard.
I feel like we got to third base with the powers that be to do that for our friends of DeSoto. And we finally, at the 11th hour, got the big city turn down. We're pretty bummed to hear about that.
Yeah.
But maybe we'll get another chance down the road because we sure do like her and her work.
I think that the point your wife made, which I really agree with, is that a lot of other shows wouldn't even be in the conversation for something like that. We are really lucky to have even gotten an opportunity to propose such a thing.
Yeah.
And
I think that's a testament to just how many friends of DeSoto there are out there. We've got a great big audience now, and the Star Trek Industrial Complex knows that.
They're starting to see that that the Friends of DeSoto are a loyal and cool group of people to be giving access to. So I'm hoping that next time one of these opportunities comes up, it actually happens.
If The Greatest Discovery is just a show that interviews Anson Mount and Anson Mount only year in and year out, then that's fine. Happy to do it. No, Anson Mount is hella
cool.
Rule.
Yeah.
Maybe that's our specialty.
Yeah, maybe so. I did mention that we interviewed Anson Mount when I was in discussions with the powers that be, and that didn't seem to move the needle. I don't know why.
I imagine they talked to Antemount, and Antemount did the like hand to throat thing. Do not.
Yeah. No. They will probably be holding like weird hoofs full of alcoholic beverages when they try and interview her. It's not cool.
They really wanted to turn it into more of a conversation and a fun hang than an interview, and that was a real put-off. I would say we have every intention of doing an award show for Lower Decks, but may take a little bit of time to get that in the can and probably in the bonus feed, given the schedule we need to make with Discovery ramping up. So look for that in the not-too-distant future.
We'll have to slip it in somewhere, but I do really want to do that. So, keep your eyes peeled for... Check the Greatest Trek account on Instagram or Twitter, and that should steer you toward that awards show when it happens, which is hopefully soon.
Hey, thanks for sticking with us for all the off-season episodes and for this first season of Lower Decks. We really appreciate all the support the show's gotten and in allowing us to continue what was once a little side project. It's now a real true blue show of its own. I feel fortunate to be able to make it, so thanks.
Indeed. Love making Greatest Discovery. All right, Adam, let's leave it with Rob's from here. Thanks to all of the listeners out there.
The Greatest Discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast. It's hosted by Adam Pranica and Ben Harrison. And the show is produced by me, Rob Schulte. Our theme music is by the great Adam Ragusea of cooking fame. Check out his YouTube channel. It's phenomenal. Hey, and if you're looking for more Trek, why don't you look at our off-season? Or better yet, catch up on all of our Star Trek Discovery episodes before next week, when Star Trek Discovery Season 3 begins. Don't forget to go follow us on Twitter and Instagram under the handles Greatest Trek. You'll get a lot of insider information there. Those accounts are run by the great Bill Tilly. Bill, we really appreciate you and your card daddy styles. Once again, thanks everyone for sticking with us through all of the new episodes of Everything Trek on The Greatest Discovery. And we'll see you next week as we begin the new season of Disco. Thanks!
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.